Seems like it ought to be reality already, doesn't it? Paul Mahler is my guest. He's a Skycar guy, and actually, we've had a series of interviews with Paul that spanned quite a number of years now, and still, the car has done nothing really much more than hover. But the promise, of course, is that it would be able to go, I don't know, 600 or 700 miles on a tank of, I presume now, ethanol. It would fly at perhaps 25,000 feet. It would take you from here to there at about 300 miles an hour. It would be an amazing, amazing device. Can you imagine air in America, the air above America, the airspace just filled with these things going back and forth on these virtual highways that Paul is describing? He certainly can imagine it. He's sunk an awful lot of money into this. In fact, we'll talk about the money angle of all this in a moment. Once again, here is Paul Mahler. Paul, if you had an infusion of money, of serious capital, how much money do you think it would take to take what you have got right now and make it completely workable?
Well, workable to the extent that you'd be able to buy an aircraft for, say, $250,000. There's a big difference between getting to 50,000 versus a $250,000.
I understand.
A $250,000 vehicle, we could probably do for about $100 million investment, just simply because you tool up for that level of production that would go with that, which might be 2,000 to 5,000 vehicles a year at the most. If you want to tool up to the level which would really get the price down, and put this in people's garages at $50,000, you'd really have to put the kind of money in that you put in when you build a new type of car at Detroit, and that, you know, that could be in the area of $500 million to $1 billion, perhaps even higher. Still, that's a small amount of money in today's world. There are many billionaires in America, obviously, they could fund that if they had the future view to do so.
Yeah, truly, you're correct. I mean, God, you've already spent $200 million. So for $100 million, you're saying you could knock out some number of them at about $250,000 a copy, right? There are plenty of people with that kind of money in America who would buy one. Now, that vehicle, I presume, would not be on these pre-done highways that you're talking about, or would they?
No, because the numbers wouldn't be there. You know, the system is driven, the highway system is driven by the number of vehicles. We have this marvelous highway system in America developed to take on cars. And, of course, because the highway system is there, we build a lot more cars to use it. So it's a catch-22 problem. It grows together. The infrastructure and the number of vehicles grow together. But $250,000 and 10,000 vehicles a year in a few years would add up to a lot. We have the view that what we're going to do is we're going to do with our engine much like we did with our muffler system. We're going to make it a worldwide product. The plans are to build almost 3 million engines a year within 2 years of production. That's $250 million a year. If those engines were in production at that level for things like motor scooters and motorcycles in the Far East, where emissions are a big problem, perhaps here at home, the kind of engine that would go in a snowmobile and get rid of the two-stroke engine there.
I'm here to tell you, Paul. I'm in Manila here in the Philippines, and we've got problems. Bangkok has problems. China has problems. Here in Asia, as you just mentioned, it's a gigantic problem. So something has got to be done, and it's got to be done soon, or the world is going to sink itself, quite literally.
You're absolutely right. And what's marvelous about the rotary engine, which our engine is clearly a derivative of, is it only has two moving parts. Even the two-stroke engine, which is the polluting master of the world right now, has three moving parts, and a four-stroke engine, a four-stroke piston engine, which can do what our engine does, has something like 50-some moving parts. And, of course, in a country that's developing, they need an inexpensive engine that is non polluting, and we have that engine. And so we think this engine is going to be, we're going to be able to fund the Sky Car with our engine development. I have absolutely no doubt about that. It'll take us a little longer than it would be if somebody came forward and gave us $1 billion tomorrow, or even $100 million. But we built $200 million in muffler product. We can build a couple billion dollars in engines in a fairly short period of time.
You bet. Question from a listener. If you fly at 25,000 feet, 25,000 feet, of course, is going to require the occupants have some sort of oxygen, right?
Well, pressurization of the vehicle. That's not as strange as it seems. You know, you can buy a home-built airplane today that have pressurization in them. Composite airplanes, the same kind of construction as we use. So Lance Air builds what they call a 400P, which is a home-built aircraft that's pressurized. So it's not it's not as far-fetched as one might think, but it is a requirement, clearly.
Mm-hmm. So pressurization would not be a problem?
No.
Okay. As you go forward, which is bigger in the picture, the unmanned vehicle right now, the military vehicle, or is the four-man or four-person manned vehicle much farther down the line?
I wouldn't say the manned vehicle is much farther down the line. I think that the immediate vehicles will be unmanned, and the reason that is, it's not a necessary factor, but it's a practical factor, because people can envision why these vehicles can be, our unmanned vehicles can be used for a number of things. For example, we have a contract from the California Highway System to build an unmanned vehicle for bridge inspection, one that can go up underneath the bridge and look for cracks, and there clearly are a number of cracks there. So we think there's a number of applications like that that are immediate that we will continue to pursue, but if money were available, there's no reason why the manned vehicle can't go forward just as fast. It's just that it seems to be much more acceptable in the minds of most of the business people who might be interested in our technology to start with unmanned vehicles.
Well, it seems to me that our car market has been sort of snatched away from us by the Japanese to a large degree. And it seems to me that if we were to proceed, if America got off its stuff and proceeded with something like your Sky Car, we could snatch that market right out from under them, couldn't we?
I absolutely agree. I think to some extent, it's a bit of a shame, I suppose, that we have to go to Eastern Europe to produce our engine. That's a fact. The economic cost of producing engines in America is too high. But we still can produce airplanes. Boeing produces airplanes competitively in the world's market. So we still have that market. And I hope to God we don't lose that like we lost the automotive market simply because we're not paying attention.
Well, I hope not, too. But there are signs that that may be just around the corner. So I'm very concerned. And America should still be leading the way in this sort of development. And the Sky Car is not just my dream, but many people's dream out there, Paul, and obviously yours. You're getting on in age. How old are you now?
I'm getting close to 70. Fortunately, I still do a lot of things to try and slow down the aging process because I became aware that this is going to take longer than I planned. So I'm doing a lot of watching my diet, doing a lot of exercise, and keeping in shape. I expect to live over 100 because that's the way I want to be around to enjoy this.
Is it going to have to go that far? Are you going to have to live to be over 100 to see the four-person vehicle become a reality?
No. I'd just like to enjoy it for a few decades after I've got it out there.
I hear that. Well, it must be. How long have you been working on this in total now?
Well, I started. I designed my first helicopter when I was 15 and started building that in that time period, and that's obviously 55 years ago, or close to 55 years ago. So I've been working on it ever since then to some degree. I got much more aggressive in the early 20s when I took a teaching position here in California in my mid-20s. I started building. I got the biggest garage in the local community with a little house attached to it, and that's where I started actually building the vehicles themselves. And I've been pursuing it both theoretically and practically ever since then. But engines have become the, or always were, the stumbling block. You need a large amount of power in a small package. Mm-hmm. And I never had that, really. Even the Mazda engine that you referred to in your car was still quite a bit heavier than necessary to make this thing fly.
Sure. So the engine is the key to the whole thing. And you say you can get them produced in Eastern Europe. What is the engine that you've got in the test vehicle that you've got now?
This is an engine that we developed, and of course, this is the engine that's being, that's going to be manufactured in Eastern Europe. It's a very small engine. We have actually models small enough you could hold in your palm of your hand to put out 2 horsepower.
Wow.
We have engines the size of a bucket that put out 150 horsepower, and we have engines the size of, maybe 2 feet long and a foot in diameter that put out 300 horsepower.
Wow. It seems to me that even current traditional U.S. car companies ought to be interested in what you just said.
Well, if we thought we would get a hearing, we would certainly approach them. But based upon just observations, I'm not very optimistic. Most of my positive reception has come from companies like Toyota and Honda, although in all fairness, Ford did take a serious look at what we're doing at one point a few years ago.
Huh. So the Japanese car companies, though, have probably taken the most intense look.
Absolutely. Toyota seems to look at everything. I mean, they really are on top of... They're even building airplanes out there, and Honda's coming out with a new airplane, a small microjet aircraft. So the car companies are looking at aircraft, not necessarily my type of aircraft for sure, but the fact that the car companies are going in the aircraft direction is a sign that the future is going to change.
Well, what's happened to our car companies in America? Why are they not forward-looking as they once were?
Well, big companies become kind of complacent over a period of time. For the Japanese to compete here, they had to offer something special, and they tended to offer initially fairly small, inexpensive cars that were reliable, and building on that reputation and continuing to keep that reputation allows them to build cars in America, Toyota and Honda, that are reliable with American manpower at economic prices compared to Detroit. I don't have a direct answer other than the fact that I've seen myself many big companies that went south because of the complacency of being the top dog.
So you began, give me a rough idea of when you began the actual Sky Car concept. Of where in your life did that start?
When I was doing my PhD at McGill University, not as part of my PhD, but as like everybody needs a hobby when they're doing a PhD, but in any case, I loved vertical takeoff aircraft so much that I ended up in the evening working on a model of an aircraft, which we called the XM-2, we called the model XM-1, but it was a scale model of the first one that I built in my garage in 1964 and 65. And flew it at the University Airport. And actually, it got quite a bit of publicity. It was shown Walter Cronkite on CBS and other things as we flew around the University Airport at 3 or 4 feet off the ground. But mm-hmm. It wasn't a stable aircraft. It, if you tried to go any higher than that, you would have crashed because you needed artificial stabilization when you were near the ground, and that was the limitation. That took us, about $25 million and about 15 years to get a system that would... fly the aircraft for itself.
What prevents now, in your opinion, what prevents a sizable investment, the additional $100 million or a lot more that you need to make this practical? What's preventing that? What's stopping these companies? When they come take a look, there must be something, some hole in this whole idea that's stopping them from forking over the money.
Well, first off, I don't know how seriously they really do consider it even to start with. I think they're checking out technologies. They think of themselves as car companies for the most part, so how serious they are, I don't know. But assuming they had some serious interest in it, they would certainly be concerned with the fact that the government is involved in the approval process, because that is a, you know, theoretically a lengthy process, the FAA certification. But in all fairness, if I'm going to take their side of the issue, I'd have to say that historically aircraft, because they've been built in small numbers historically, have not made much money, nor has engines for aircraft made much money, because the numbers have been small. And unless you have this vision that this can be large and we can produce a huge number of these aircraft, it makes them very nervous in that, in fact, the numbers would be small. I think any major breakthrough, paradigm-shifting kind of breakthrough, is going to have a lot of resistance because of its difficulty in predicting the future. And big companies don't tend to be very futuristic.
No, they don't. I suppose not. Is there any chance that you could cobble together a version of, perhaps even with the vehicle that you have now, that would demonstrate horizontal flight as well as vertical flight? I assume that you still have only done your vertical flight in a tethered fashion. Is that correct?
That's correct, but the main reason for that is the engines we were using up until recently were very limited in their power, but we have made a fairly major breakthrough in the amount of power we're getting out of the engine, and we're installing 8 much more powerful engines. The previous engines had about 65 horsepower each, and we're putting in 8 engines that have 120 horsepower each. They fit in the same space. And this would really allow us the extra power in case we lost a number of engines, or just the ability to control becomes a lot easier if you have excess power. And we're also building a lake, a fairly sizable lake, over which we can do low-speed flights, not high-speed flights, because high-speed flights you definitely go up to altitude to do. But low-speed flights in an area untethered where the press could observe them. And we have actually over 1,000 sign-ups by the press to attend a flight next spring when we do this.
Oh, this will occur next spring.
We believe it will. We've got enough things going right now. Most of the tooling is complete for the new engine installation. We have the engines almost completely assembled. We have started the lake as a project to have complete in the next few months. And so once the weather clears in the spring, I believe we'll be in a position to give a demonstration that would be safe and at the same time show the full capabilities, short of conversion to full aerodynamic flight.
Mm-hmm.
Which,
where are you building this lake?
We're building it at a commercial complex, one of my real estate projects that keep me alive in life, called the Melk Farm in Northern California. It's quite a famous commercial site many, many years ago, and I'm resurrecting it. And as part of that, I'm building a lake which would be part of the commercial complex. And I will use that at least initially for my test flights.
I see. Well, then you are making progress.
If anybody's interested, they could look up melkfarm.net and they can read about the site where the lake is going to be and where we'll be doing our test flying.
People are very, Paul, people are very, what's the right word, impatient, you know, and they hear about something like this, and then the next thing they want to hear is that they can go out and buy one. And, of course, as you've pointed out, we're talking about hundreds of millions of dollars of investment here and some not very forward-looking companies, and you're just doing this on your own. So, like many pioneers, it is possible, Paul, that you may not see this come to fruition in your lifetime. I guess that's occurred to you.
Well, no, actually it hasn't.
Well, you're an optimist.
No, if I wasn't an optimist, I wouldn't be here. But everything that I've done has generally taken longer than I planned. But certainly when we set out to develop an engine that we've now completed that has a world market, we succeeded. When we went into the muffler business, we became the dominant manufacturer of these kind of products in the world. I am sure we're going to be successful to some level. Now, will I see this as a replacement for the automobile? I don't think so, not in my lifetime, but as a vehicle that can replace about 40% of the miles we travel today on the highway, which is 50 miles and more, I say absolutely.
All right. Well, Paul, hold it right there. We're at a break point from the Philippines. I'm Art Bell. This is Coast to Coast AM. Indeed. Here I am. My guest is Paul Mahler. He is the Sky Car, Paul Mahler, and he's been working on it for years. It's been his dream. What I want to do is a segment, a 30-minute segment, and take questions from all of you in the audience. So if you have a question about the Sky Car, its progress, where it's eventually going to go, and how it's going to get there, pick up a telephone and join us now, and I'll get you on the air with Paul Mahler. For me, it's a dream. I don't know. I guess I've had this dream of personal flight, and I know I'm not alone. Here's a man working on it, now 70 years old. I guess we've been doing interviews now for about the past, 8 or 10 years. Maybe Paul can fill me in on that. And we can all only hope that the Sky Car will become reality. Paul Mahler, and your chance to speak with him in a moment. Once again, Paul Mahler. As I said, we'll do a segment here and take questions from all of you about the Sky Car and its progress, or in the view of some, its lack of progress. But Paul is one man, and I guess he's about $200 million into this project right now to get a car that would work and would sell for about $250,000. Expensive, but hey, for those with a dream, I think a lot of people would be willing to fork it over. It would take about another $100 million. So, Paul, if you're there, I'd like to take some questions from the audience.
Sure.
Great. Okay, here we go. West of the Rockies, you're on the air with Paul Mahler.
Hello. Hello, Mr. Bell. Hello, Mr. Mahler. I've been seeing stuff on the Internet about your car for ages, and it's so cool that you're doing this show. I'd just like to ask, you were discussing economic scale. Is it possible, and I know this may be a horribly, horribly stupid question because I'm not informed about the subject at all. Is it possible to do mass transit vehicles? Because Boeing seems to be doing pretty well with their mass transit, and they make significantly more money if they can squeeze a few more people into the plane because they can sell it for more. So, like, would a bus be tenable? Or
okay. A Mahler?
No, it's not. But the idea here would be flight on demand rather than schedule. So it's mass transportation, but at a more individual level. For example, you'd have probably six passenger-type vehicles at the airport. When six people arrive, it leaves. When six more people arrive, it leaves. Mm-hmm. So that you're not on schedule, but you're on demand. And that's a form of mass transportation, but at a much more individual level. That's possible. Sky cars cannot be built big. The physics, the laws involved don't allow that to go beyond a certain point, but it still allows mass transportation the way I describe it.
Okay, well, that's all right. A bus would be more like, you know, getting on a 767 or something like that anyway. Paul, I like the idea of the small Sky Car, and I guess you do too. East of the Rockies, you're on the air with Paul Mahler. Hi.
Yes, sir. In the 60s already, there were people that were interested in a one-man helicopter, and you have these fine engines and these exotic computers. I think the one-man helicopter not only would be very feasible, but would pave the way for the national system, and the motorcycles around the world by the millions are one-man vehicles.
All right. Well, that is, a good question for Paul. Paul, because he did work on helicopters early on. Paul?
Well, a helicopter is, by nature, a very complicated machine with all the mechanics. It's often been described as a large number of parts flying in formation. There's a good reason for that. A tremendous amount of cost associated with all those mechanical parts, tremendous maintenance, difficult typically to fly even when stabilized. And that's one of the reasons we gave up the helicopter idea. I think that our engine would contribute to that field, but I don't think that the helicopter will go fast enough, for one thing. I think people want a really fundamental change in the speed above that of an automobile, and everybody seems to be going 80 miles an hour today, so I got to go faster than that. There's a number of reasons why the Sky Car is really the option if you really want a paradigm shift in transportation.
Oh, and I really do, too. Wildcard Line, you're on the air with Paul Muller. Hi.
Hi, Art. Hi, Paul. I have a question, sort of a curiosity about the physics. I don't think it would be necessary for a sky car to ever do this because of all the different safety checks. I'm familiar with a sky car, but I am curious to know whether it would be capable of flaring out if it ever had to, though it probably would never have to.
When you say flare out, you're talking about whether it could be made to land in a conventional airport, for example?
Well, what I'm saying is, for example, if the engine absolutely quit or all the backup engines quit, everything quit, the idea is when you're falling, using the apparent updraft due to your falling through space to power the fan as a windmill and get enough flywheel out of the rotor to then reverse the blades on it once again to get power just from inertia of the spin of the engine to make a powered landing in the last few moments.
Yes, you're talking about auto-rotation like the helicopter.
Yeah. Yeah.
No, that's not possible, but you know, even if auto-rotation of a helicopter is flying below 200 feet and hovering, it's called the dead man's corridor for a good reason. Even with auto-rotation, you're going to die. So what we've really done is we built in, of course, redundancy in the number of engines and in the computers, plus we have on board parachutes so that if you can slow the thing down long enough to deploy the parachutes, then you have that option. But parachutes are not good for certainly under 100 feet. You really have to have this redundancy, this ability that you can tolerate failures.
Mm-hmm. Okay. First-time caller line. You're on the air with Paul Muller. Hi.
Hello. I just have two questions for Paul here. One question is, how would you be able to compete with the airlines, since the airlines are a hell of a lot cheaper? And the second question is, which is really concerning here, if it happened to get a hold, the terrorists actually got a hold of this, could be a very destructive weapon in the United States. It can hover, it can go over the White House or major cities.
All right. Both are probably good questions. First of all, competition with the airlines, Paul.
Well, Boeing did an extensive study on our technology and concluded that, and this actually is available on the Internet, which if anybody checks with the company can find out the address. But they showed that it would be actually very competitive with a commercial business because of the basic low cost, the low cost of burning fuel, for example. Jet airplanes, even though they carry a lot of people, still burn a lot of fuel per passenger.
Mm-hmm.
But, of course, in the very big airplanes that they're contemplating, no, we couldn't compete the latest, most efficient jet planes on that basis. But then again, you're giving up a lot. You're flying with a whole bunch of people, and you're going from point A to point B, which may not be where you want to go, but the only way to get there indirectly. With our vehicle, you can go personally from any small place to any other small place. And, of course, these very small jets that are coming about today, you may have heard about, like Eclipse, is going to try and help you do that. So there's a big market for that and the desire of people to go from point A to point B on their own schedule.
Okay, and the terrorist question.
Well, I think we have the best answer for terrorism there is, because if you have this organized highway in the sky where you know where every vehicle is precisely and why they're there, you won't get any surprises. People aren't going to appear from out of nowhere. First off, as I said, the vehicles are controlled from the ground rather than the air to start with. And so the terrorist, long before he gets into the controlled airspace, is going to be identified. And we're going to know everything about everybody. You may not like that concept, but that's going to be the nature of this world, because that's how we get people to go safely from one point to the other without running into one another. So
I think that's the way the world's going anyway. Yeah, it's going that way anyway. If you've taken an airplane flight lately, you know that. West of the Rockies, you're on the air with Paul Muller. Hi.
Oh, good evening, Art.
Good evening.
Good evening.
Wonderful to talk to you guys. I don't know if you touched on this before, but as far as the power for the motor, I've seen things about Honda. They are doing a home-type hydrogen system to where they could plug their cars in for hydrogen. Do you guys have any kind of plans for motors that would run on hydrogen? I'd like your input on that. Thank you.
Well, the rotary engine has been run on hydrogen, but the infrastructure of hydrogen is 15 years away. We could convert to ethanol tomorrow because we could take out the high-octane pump and put in a ethanol, which is even a higher octane. and we could have ethanol in every available to everybody almost tomorrow. Hydrogen is at least 15 years away just because of the infrastructure, but hydrogen does work in the rotary engine.
Okay, good enough. East of the Rockies, your turn with Paul Muller. Hi.
Hello, Art. It's Rob out in Albuquerque, the home of that Eclipse Aviation jet that your guest was mentioning. I see it fly around here all the time. Even that thing's like a $1.5 million now. But question for your guest is, as an aircraft owner, he's, I guess, proposing that this is all going to be under electronic flight rules, which would mean that in order for me to fly my little Cessna in the airspace that currently exists with this vertical takeoff and landing sky car he's talking about, I have to upgrade my little Cessna with probably $30,000, $40,000, $50,000 worth of avionics so that we don't fly into each other, because obviously the person flying the vehicle won't be a pilot.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the only thing we have to do is protect ourselves or protect you from going into this controlled airspace, specifically controlled virtual highway in the sky. And, of course, one of the reasons your systems would cost $40,000 is because we produce very few of them. But the ABS-B system, which gives you a very good sense of who's around you and why they're there, is going to be very inexpensive. The TCAS, which is one that you may be aware of, that's pretty expensive. It wouldn't be something that could go in immediately. But if we have huge volumes, that would be additional support for you that would assure that you could operate the way you want and still coexist with this highway in the sky that I'm talking about.
And Paul, what would be the impact on commercial aviation?
Well, I think it would be a very complementary approach, because, you know, if you want to go long distances, the jet airliners are still the way to go. And as the guest earlier mentioned, when it gets to these large airplanes they're contemplating, there's nobody that can compete with that in terms of passenger miles per gallon of fuel. But if you want to go these short distances, jet planes are not very efficient. So much of the fuel is used taking off and landing and climbing that they become very uneconomic. So I think that there's a very complementary role it can fill. It'll offload airports because we don't need to have runways. And, of course, airports are running out of space today, and there are no new major airports planned in America. So I don't know where we're going to be 10 years from now for aircraft flight. We really need something like this that complements some of the auto industry and complements some of the aircraft industry. And quite frankly, if I didn't do it, it would happen anyhow. It's inevitable.
All right. First time, make that wild card line. You're on the air with Paul Muller. Hi.
Hi, George from over in Pennsylvania.
Hi, George.
Dr. Miller, your vehicle is with the 8 motors. It's just fantastic, and you have so much control. How come, though you use the, gasoline or whatever, that you haven't thought about the lifter over unity type motors that do exist that you would have gimbalized?
Which over unity motor, sir, hold it. Which over unity motor is that?
Well, the over unity motor of any, what they call an outside type motor, say in England for refrigerators, and configured and free, it flies and it gets up in the air, and it's just a matter of spinning, which is what he has on his craft. And
I'm not familiar with any over unity motor.
Very good. John R. Cyril.
Mm-hmm.
He has an
All right. Well, we'll certainly
published in on the net and everything.
Published on the net. Okay. Well, Paul, what he's talking about, you know what over unity is, don't you?
I'm familiar with what he's talking about, but the fact of the matter is, I've never seen one of these work in front of me, and I think something like this may eventually come, but I don't think the physics is there yet. That's just my impression.
Actually, the physics totally argues with it all the way. Wildcard line, you're on the air with Paul Muller. Hi. Hello.
Good evening, sir. This is Mike from West Palm, Florida.
Yes.
And yes, my question for Dr. Muller is, has the government even expressed any interest in the vehicle? Because the potential I see is this would be a very good first responder vehicle.
Yes, the government is very interested for a medevac vehicle and a logistics vehicle. But a government typically does not give contracts to companies our size simply because there's a lot of reasons why a company our size might be a liability. We may not,
be big enough to do the job. So it really looks to us to find a partner, and that's what we've done in the past. When we have contracts that come up, we go out and join forces with other companies, such as Pratt & Whitney or a number of other companies I could name, which we've worked with, to do it together, because they have a presence in Washington, and that's what we're doing right now.
All right, good enough. East of the Rockies, your turn with Paul Mueller. Hi.
Yes, Dr. Mueller. Last time you were on with Mr. Bell, you were still having difficulties with the software control to some extent. You had it hovering, but for forward flight, I don't think you, if I remember correctly, had it all the way worked out. Are you still working on that? Are you using auto-generating software? I'm just curious.
We've come a long way since we last talked to you, mostly in the area of redundancy, because while we were redundant when we talked, we didn't really have as redundant a system. You could find areas where a failure could have brought down the aircraft. And so we've spent probably 3 years now building that system to a much higher level of reliability. And while we haven't tested it any significant flights forward, we certainly have simulated in detail, which is where you start off and when you're checking something in any case. So we're,
and, of course, the ethanol breakthrough is gigantic. So
yes, absolutely. It's really, well, first off, if something goes wrong, ethanol is so much safer in so many ways.
Yeah, a good point. First-time caller line, you're on the air with Paul Mueller. Hi.
Hi. This is Vernon from Costa Mesa.
Yes.
A question about, I'm handicapped and I have hand control. Are these vehicles going to have hand controls for the handicapped?
The vehicles are entirely hand control. I don't think that using your feet to steer like a light plane is a natural thing in the first place. We've had some bad experiences with untrained people in some of our simulators when we tried to use that initially. So everything is hand controls. Your feet are not used at all for anything, including braking or anything else. So I think this would be the perfect vehicle for someone who only has hand control.
Well, it truly would. Wildcard Line, you're on the air with Paul Mueller. Hi.
Yes, hello. I'm Donald from Eureka, Illinois, and
yes.
I was wondering if he's building these by himself, and if so, does he need help?
Well, when myself, of course, in no way do I have the skill to be an expert electronics designer, either hardware or software, nor am I an expert composite man. So, of course, we're a public company. We have a large number of stockholders. We have a fairly high market capitalization. And so, really, we're dealing with a lot of skilled people involved to make this happen. Not enough, I would say, as I would certainly like to add a few hundred more to our company. But we would certainly, at the same time, if we're the skilled people out there, we're always looking for them. And they can look at our Internet site, and they can see the kind of people we're trying to have join us.
Okay, and of course, we've got a link to your Internet site on coasttocoastam.com right now. Paul, what do you need most? Is the answer money?
Well, it's money, but it really is money and a relationship as well, because, as I said, money alone, I'm not at this stage of my life planning to create another General Motors.
Sure.
I want to see this project a success, and I'm going to make it a success by joining forces with the right a partner when we've decided who that should be.
Okay, so that process is still underway. Well, listen, Paul, I want to thank you for updating us on what you're doing. And you're obviously a pioneer. You're a great guy, and we'll have you back again as you know, as each step comes along. Paul, I hope you'll take the chance to think of us and update us with where the Skycar is.
Yes, you might mention to somebody, they can just put Skycar on any search engine on the Internet, and they're going to find an enormous number of things they can read about. Skycar alone is enough to get them anything they want to see.
Skycar on Google, and you're there. All right, Paul Mueller, thank you, buddy. Take care.
Thank you. It's good talking to you again, Art.
Good night. And when we come back, we will go into 1 hour of absolute undiluted open lines. From Manila in the Philippines, I'm Art Bell. This is Coast to Coast AM.